and for organizing it. And though I have to admit, it's been the least theoretical meeting I've been to in a long time. So those of you who know me know that I've been thinking for a while now about trying to use extra dimensional theories to describe various problems. And so in thinking about what to talk about here, I was very undecided because, you know, the problem I've been most excited about for a long time is trying to use holographic duality involving gravity and extra dimensions to describe systems with Fermi surfaces, which, as you all know, are some of the most highly entangled ground states that we know about. They have this, you know, violation of the area law. But, you know, I've been getting really tired of people asking me about, you know, so can these systems that you can describe with the gravity dual be related to any real physical system? You know, I'm really tired of not knowing the answer to this question. And so I decided instead to talk about systems where I know the answer to this question for sure, and the answer is no. So you'll see what I mean. So this is work that my understanding has been developing very rapidly, I have to admit, and it's work that I've been doing with a new student at UCSD, Shauna Kravick, and with some important conversations with Senthil and some last minute very crucial advice about using Brian Swingle's deep knowledge of lattice gauge theory. Okay, so the subject of this talk is examples of obstructions to symmetry preserving regulators of quantum field theory. And the way that we're going to go about this is to understand some examples of such obstructions by thinking about some states of matter. I guess this phrase is poetry in this context. In one higher dimensions that have an energy gap. So more precisely, thinking about their low energy effective field theories below the gap, which means topological field theories. And in particular, I'm going to be thinking, so like I said, I want to think about obstructions to regulating field theories in 3+1 dimensions. And so we're going to think about 4+1 dimensional topological field theories. And so you can see right away that these are going to be difficult states to realize. A summary of the strategy here is that we're going to use theories that obviously don't exist in the sense that they're 4+1 dimensional to prove that certain slightly more reasonable looking things that, you know, maybe could exist because at least they have the right number of dimensions don't exist even in principle. Okay, does everybody follow the logic there? it's basically a proof that no one will ever cite the paper. Right? That's the content of the paper. So there are various... No? Where no?
Sir? I didn't mean unisotheoretical.
So one possible consequence of this, which we'll see what happens, is we may be able to constrain supersymmetry preserving regulators. Regulators that explicitly preserve supersymmetry.
That's really unknown.
We're constraining supersymmetry. Constraining regulators of supersymmetry. Yeah. But you'll see what I'm going to show. Okay, so here's the introduction. I'm going to go fast because you all know these things and you've heard about them a lot in the last few, the very recent past. So a basic interesting question is, what are possible gap phases of matter where we consider two of them to be equivalent if we can connect them adiabatically by slowly varying the Hamiltonian without whose ground state they are without closing the energy gap. So there's yellow things and there's blue things. I mean, there's green things, which are connected by this wall where the gap closes, disconnected by the wall where the gap closes. So one way of answering this question is by thinking about how the symmetries of the Hamiltonian are realized. And there's an old-fashioned way to think about that, which is due to Landau, which is to characterize states by the symmetries that they break. And, you know, not to say that this isn't interesting, but it's kind of understood, so let's put a check mark and forget about it. So to use a locution coined by Senthil, we're going to mod out by Landau and ask, what are possible gap phases that don't break symmetries, and how can we distinguish them? And famously, an answer to this question is, we can distinguish them by if they have topological order, which, let me remind you a few words about what this means so that we can then also mod out by it. It has three intimately connected features. It means fractionalizations of the statistics and symmetry quantum numbers of the elementary excitations, and a consequent ground state degeneracy on some spatial, if you put the system on a space with non-trivial topology, which is a consequence of this because you can show that these operators, which are associated with adiabatically moving these quasi-particles around the cycles of the space, satisfy this algebra as a consequence of their statistics, which some Mason explained this very, very nicely. I don't need to say more about it. And it maps the ground states to each other. And a further consequence of this is that it requires quantum mutual information between regions of space that are not right next to each other. In particular, the entanglement entropy of the reduced density matrix of some subregion of such a state involves, behind this non-universal area law, some topological entanglement entropy, which, at least for abelian states, is a direct measure of this number of this ground state degeneracy. And this is something which is positive, and okay, and so you can see whether it's there or not. And a nice proof that this is indeed a sharp measure of this kind of topological order is in this nice paper by Thrun and R. Turner and Ashvin, which I guess I won't explain, but starting from an assumption that the state has short-range entanglement, you can show that this thing has to vanish. Okay, so I say that in anticipation of, well, this is hard, and so let's try to instead solve a simpler problem, and so we'll mod out by Jagong as well, and ask what are possible gap phases that not only don't break any symmetries, but don't have topological order. Okay. Apparently being in the denominator is some kind of measure of esteem. The discussion that follows is actually in this nice review that Ashton wrote. In the absence of topological order, so we'll say that such states are short range entangled. Another answer to this question of how to distinguish different states is to put the system on a space with boundary. And so here comes the sentence: a gap state of matter in d plus one dimensions with short range entanglement can be characterized by its edge states, by what happens if you consider an its interface with vacuum. And so I don't say exactly its edge states because, you know, there can be several different ways of having edge states. It could be gapless, there could be topological order, there could be symmetry breaking, but there has to be something interesting there, and that something interesting can characterize the state. Okay, and notice, I guess I should mention, I'm using the West Coast definition of short-range entangled, which is distinct from the idea that it should be deformable to a product state by a finite number of local unitaries. So instead, I'm just saying there's no topological order. Okay, so I would consider... This is your definition, though. This is the East Coast definition. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I think it's accurate, right?
Yeah, because you didn't see the VS.
Yeah, yeah, versus. Yeah.
Then you make a normal East Coast. Sorry, but
yeah. No, I think everyone who uses this definition is on the East Coast. Yeah, I think it's true.
So sorry, the West Coast then?
On the West Coast, it's this definition that this thing vanishes, that gamma vanishes. So no ground state degeneracy. So this is a weak condition. Right? So for example, this E8 state is short range entangled according to this criterion and not this criterion. Yeah. Here's the intuition. You know, this is not at all precise, but the picture that you should have in your mind about why there have to be edge states is the following. So, you know, we say two states are different if we can't connect them adiabatically by deforming the Hamiltonian from one to the other one. That means in between, if you pick some path from one to the other in the space of couplings, the gap has to close. And so, if you imagine instead varying the coupling in space, as for example, Steve White did so nicely in his simulations, somewhere in between the gap should close, and therefore there should be something there. And notice, by the way, the important role of the short-range entanglement assumption, that we're assuming that when we do this variation of the coupling, you know, so we're going to, so over here we have state A, over here we change the coupling to something else. The idea that making that change in the Hamiltonian over here doesn't have an influence on the wave function over here is something that is accurate because of the fact that we're assuming short-range entanglement. Okay, a refinement of these words, a useful definition is to say a symmetry-protected topological state or symmetry-protected trivial state protected by a symmetry group G is one of these short-range entangled states, which is not adiabatically connected to a product state, if you restrict yourself to the Hamiltonians that preserves the symmetry G. Okay, so you all know examples of this. And I guess it's worth mentioning that interactions matter. And with interactions, it's interesting. And a simplifying feature of the space of such SPD states for a given G is that they form a group. And the group law is very simple. Here's a picture of one of these states, and here's its edge. This little arrow is to denote that something is moving there. And the addition law is you take two of them, you put them on top of each other, and then you deform the Hamiltonian by all the terms that are allowed. And so then you get a new one that, you know, maybe these edge modes pair up, maybe they don't. The interesting part is that there's an inverse. So the group has an inverse, it's not a semigroup. And the inverse is just the mirror image. And so here's A, minus A is just, you just look in the mirror, and the statement that this is the inverse means that when you put them on top of each other and add all the terms that are allowed by the symmetries, you know just from the picture that there's a term by which you can couple these edge modes to these edge modes and gap them out, because it can just turn. And the fact that it can just turn means that you can also couple them in the middle. And so this is equivalent to just nothing. Yes, please.
And would you say this also holds at the two-dimensional surface of a three-dimensional
one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little harder to draw, but yeah. So notice, by the way, that with topological order, with long-range entanglement, even if we can do this kind of thing to the edge modes, there's nevertheless still stuff going on in the bulk. If you take two states with topological order and do this procedure of putting them on top of each other, no matter what happens at the edge, there's still all these, you know, you've multiplied the number of species of anions, and so there's still stuff there. So that's not a group. Maybe it's some other mathematical object that's interesting. Once I say that this is a group for a given G, it's a natural question to ask what group it is. I think I'm going to throw up if I hear someone say that Kataev knows the answer but won't tell anyone, but it's true. Okay, for the purposes of this talk, I don't need to know anything about what the group is. I'm just going to ask about examples. Let's ask about examples of such things.
Excuse me, when you say gap out X, do you really mean gap out everything with nothing, with no DDRs left behind, or do you only mean gap out those quasi particle excitation?
I think I really mean get rid of everything. Yeah, it's important. It's important in order to be able to characterize the states by the edge that you can get rid of everything. Yeah, so this is it's an assumption, right, that we can characterize them by the edge. And I'm going to rely on that assumption. And so here's the key machinery that we're going to use here. Consider the following counterfactual statement. Suppose the edge theory of one of these SPT states were realized otherwise. That is, not on the edge of an SPT state, but intrinsically in D dimensions with some local Hilbert space, some local Hamiltonian. Then you could just take that stuff, you know, it's like paint that you can just take that thing for the conjugate local theory and paint it on the edge of one of these SPT states. Here's the edge of A, we're supposing we can realize the counterpropagating version of the edge states of A, paint them on there, and then you can just get rid of it, right, and leave behind this, you know, deformed version of A where there's no edge states. Yes?
Even a theory that is always a theory, not a theory can put there for gap
everything. Yes, because it's you just look at it in the mirror, is the other theory. It's the same theory with the opposite.
The monster CFT.
The monster CFT. Well, so the monster CFT violates the assumption that there's a gap. Certainly. But certainly there's an anti-monster CFT, which can eat the monster, right? They're all irrelevant. I see. So you could ask me, is there a 2 plus 1 dimensional SPT state where the monster CFT is the surface state? And the answer is no. Because it's chiral, right? The chiral monster CFT doesn't have any. Yeah. Yeah. So this can't happen. This violates our assumption that we could characterize the thing by its edge states. The conclusion is that the edge theories of states that you can realize this way, of symmetry protected topological states protected by G, cannot be regularized intrinsically in D dimensions without the bulk preserving the symmetry. So Senthil called these not edgeable. I guess maybe it's a little easier to call them surface only models. I don't know. This piece of logic has been used and was articulated very clearly in this paper by Senthil and Chang Wang, and has been used in many of discussions in this meeting. I have to mention that Zhagang has recently been using this idea to try to classify anomalies. we'll see if the thing I'm going to talk about is in the list. Okay, so one, the most famous example, I think maybe both among high energy physicists and among condensed matter physicists, though maybe it goes by different names, of an obstruction to regularizing a field theory consistent with symmetries was articulated by Nielsen and Ninomiya sometime in the 80s. And it's the statement that it's not possible to regulate free fermions while preserving the chiral symmetry. So in even dimensions, I mean a symmetry that rotates left-moving and right-moving fermions oppositely or differently. And in odd dimensions, I just mean parity. A more precise statement of this theorem is that fermion action, which it's a Gaussian action for fermions, I've written in a momentum space. If I try to regulate them on the lattice, the momentum space is a torus. It's a statement about the form of this kinetic operator in momentum space. The statement is that it can't satisfy the following three conditions simultaneously. It can't be a smooth periodic function on this torus, which is what you get if it's if it's the Fourier transform of a local hopping term on the lattice. The second thing it can't do at the same time as the other two is it can't have a single Dirac cone. So that is a point in the Brillouin's where this operator locally looks like the Dirac operator, and is invertible everywhere else. And the third thing is commuting with the chirality matrix. So if it commutes with the chirality matrix, there'll be a chiral symmetry. Yeah, please.
So that is still an equivalent to say there's a chiral anomaly.
It's not exactly the same thing.
But if I have one symmetry, I can always cover one.
That's right. So if you had the symmetry, if the chiral symmetry were a symmetry of the lattice model, it would be an exact symmetry of the quantum system. There would be no chiral anomaly. So that's right. That's right. So the existence of the chiral anomaly requires something like this. That's right. It's not exactly equivalent.
So how about for my gamma fermion? Yeah, it's complex.
Yeah, you're right. I wrote it in a way to preserve the. Then we need to say something about like what. How many dimensions we're in, and this kind of thing. There is a version of it from Majorana fermions, and to show you that must be the case, let me just show you the basic point, which you can see in 1+1 dimensions, which is to say that this. So let's imagine we're trying to regulate it on the lattice. Actually, this theorem there's a version of it that's true for any kind of regulator, but let me just show you if you try to regulate it on the lattice, then the momentum space is periodic. And the Hamiltonian looks something like this. I just renamed the letter. Sorry about that. But so this H is some matrix of it's the Hamiltonian of the thing at a given momentum. You diagonalize it, and its eigenvalues look something like this. The important thing is that they're periodic functions, and so you can see that they have to cross zero an even number of times if they're continuous and periodic. And in 1+1 dimensions, the sine of the velocity, which is the sine of the slope of this curve, is equal to the eigenvalue of the chirality matrix. That's the Dirac equation in 1+1 dimensions. So you see that there have to be an even number of these things. Okay, there are various refinements of it, and as Zheng Cheng said, it's consistent with the ABJ anomaly. Okay, so this statement can be recast as a consequence of SPT states in 4+1 dimensions. So to see that, we can realize a simple field theory, which is an effective field theory for a certain class of non-trivial SPT states in 4+1 dimensions. They're very simple. The field theory is you just have a massive fermion with a relativistic kinetic term and a mass, and the mass is real in 4+1 dimensions, and plus or minus m label distinct phases. And one way to see that they're distinct phases is to use this charge symmetry that I've imposed here and couple it to an external gauge field, which I'll call capital A, and integrate out the fermions. The path integral for these fermions in the presence of this external gauge field produces a functional of that external gauge field, which measures some generalization of a whole response. In 4+1 dimensions, you need more fields and pointing in more directions, but the important thing is that the coefficient is quantized. In particular, the sign of the coefficient is determined by the sign of the mass. So the two things are different. And as a result of this, if you consider a domain wall in the mass, so this direction y is the fifth dimension, and here's the mass as a function of y, imagine it's positive over here and negative over here, then it's a simple field theory. It's a simple differential equation to show that there's an exponentially localized zero energy mode localized on the domain wall, which is chiral, which is a chiral fermion from the point of view of a 3 plus 1 dimensional thing. Okay. And so the fact that this chiral fermion is realized on the surface of this non-trivial SPT phase shows that you can't regularize it intrinsically in three dimensions. And the much more famous example of this in some circles is the 3 plus 1 dimensional version where without any discrete symmetries, the mass is complex, but with time reversal invariance, it's real, and there's a magneto-electric response in the presence of an external gauge field, and the domain wall hosts a single Dirac cone. Okay, so this suggests the following simple strategy. Find a simple topological field theory in 4 plus 1 dimensions without topological order with some symmetry, G. Put the model on a disk or some space with a boundary like the upper half-plane with some boundary conditions, and then the resulting edge theory is a surface-only theory with respect to G. That is, just the construction of this theory as the surface states of this bulk SPT state cannot be regulated, shows that it cannot be regulated as an intrinsically 3 plus 1 dimensional system. So from some points of view, it doesn't exist. But let me say what I mean by that. So it's these theories that arise on the surface are perfectly consistent, they're unitary, they can be realized as the edge theory of some bulk. Below the bulk gap, there's no sense in which they're losing information to the bulk. They just can't be regularized in a local way consistent with the symmetries without the bulk. Okay, so one thing it means is that probably these field theories will not be found as the low energy effective field theories of solids or cold atoms, lattice simulations, or in materials. I say probably because this doesn't rule out emergent symmetries. It doesn't rule out the idea that the symmetries could be restored even if they're broken at short distances, which, of course, people use all the time in a lattice gauge theory, for example. And it doesn't rule out more exotic short distance completions, which I have to mention. For example, ones that include gravity or which involve decoupling limits of gravity or string theory. Okay, so of course, the idea that of having a UV complete description which includes gravity has its own issues, which I don't want to talk about, but it's worth mentioning that string theory, what we know about string theory strongly suggests the existence of certain Lorentz invariant states that involve gravity with chiral fermions and also lots of supersymmetry. And some of these seems possible to consistently decouple them from gravity. That there exists a theory with gravity, you can take a limit where it's a theory without gravity. So this is a different kind of regulator, which seems it's more ambitious, let's say. Okay, so I don't want to talk about that, I just want to find a simple example. And I'm going to follow the 4 plus 1, very direct 4 plus 1 dimensional analog of the K-matrix approach that Ashwin described this morning in 2 plus 1 dimensions. So here's the kind of system I want to talk about. It's a theory of two forms. So these are two form fields in 4 plus 1 dimensions, and the important equation there is 2 plus 2 plus 1 equals 5. Okay, that's the equation you need to understand, because this thing is a two form. D of it is, this D is a thing that adds a form degree, and B is a two form, and so these things add up to 5. This is something I can integrate in 5 dimensions without introducing a metric. Okay, and so this thing is, it's a field theory, it's a simple field theory of these Bs, which is a very pretty direct generalization of Chern-Simons theory in 2 plus 1 dimensions. And one important difference is from 2 plus 1 dimensions is that unlike for one forms, if you take B wedge B, where there are two forms, a two form is a commuting object, and so that's not zero. And so if you take D of it, you get B wedge DB. And so if you just have a single two form, you can't write down an action. You can't write down a non-zero action because it's the total derivative. And so the simpler way to say this is that the K matrix, the thing by which we couple these things, is anti-symmetric in 4 plus 1 dimensions, whereas it's symmetric in 2 plus 1. Yeah.
So the 2 plus 1 dimensional K matrix, we know that it's a theory of particles because
yes,
the
that's
particle
right.
current, mm-hmm. right, that is, you know, BA.
Yeah.
So here, you know.
This is, okay, we're going to get there, yeah? Yes?
So the two form.
Yeah.
So do you have particles in theory or do you
no.
have strings?
There's strings. Well, actually, there's no strings. They're just two forms.
I know, but
yeah, I will give you an argument that this is the theory of bosons.
But the boson current is limited to B in
more complicated way. What I mean is it's a bosonic theory. Yeah.
You don't have particle like bosons.
There aren't particle like excitations. In fact, there are no excitations. It's a topological field theory. Yeah.
But
think he's asking what can you couple to as a source.
Yeah, he knows very well that you can couple it to strings.
But yeah. So
strings. Yeah. You'll see. You'll see. Be patient. Yeah. Yeah, I'll talk about the current. Yeah.
So not quite the direct analog of the 2B2.
It's the direct analog, it just has an extra index. Be patient. Be patient. Ask again if I don't answer in 5 minutes. All right. Okay. So this is the theory I'm studying, and it's okay. So the K-matrix is anti-symmetric. It's a topological theory because we didn't have to introduce a metric to write it down. If you like, we could add Maxwell-like terms with some suppressed by some mass scale, which would introduce propagating gapped modes. We don't need to do that. This model, these kinds of models have been studied a lot in many different contexts. One thing that was learned in the sometime in the 80s is that in the same way that the Chern-Simons term in 2 plus 1 dimensions measures the linking of external particles that you couple to it. So if I take world lines of particles and couple them minimally to a Chern-Simons field, the Chern-Simons invariant, Chern-Simons, and integrate out the Chern-Simons field, the result is the linking number of the particles. This is why it can change the statistics. The analog of that is to couple it to string sources, like I was saying, to couple it minimally to the world sheets of strings. And so this is also a picture of that, but I mean, suppressing one dimension along this thing and one dimension along this thing. And this fact that B wedge B is symmetric has a corresponding sort of Poincaré dual fact that the two kinds of string, that you need two different kinds of strings. It measures the linking number of two species of world sheets. So the string that couples, it measures the linking of the string that couples to this, to B, with the string that couples to the conjugate guy, the other B. Well, I'll call it C. Okay. And the simplest case, probably none of you except for Davide care about this maybe, is realized in type 2B string theory on ADS5 times S5, which is famous. And one of the Bs is the Never-Schwarz-Never-Schwarz 2-form, and the other one is the Ruhmann-Ruhmann 2-form. Okay, never mind. Yeah. And so Greg Moore is one of the people that studied this kind of theory a lot, and he refers to this class of theories as trivial but difficult. It's trivial in the sense that it's a Gaussian theory, right? We know how to do Gaussian integrals, but it's difficult in the sense that global issues can be very important. And in particular, we need to specify what we mean by the inequivalent configurations of B. And so I'm going to consider B to be equivalent to B plus an exact one form. So this is an ordinary kind of gauge transformation. So this D of a one form is considered a trivial B. And I'm also going to consider B to be equivalent to B plus an integer cohomology class. So this is a closed form, but it's not D of a one form. Okay, and its integral over a two cycle is an integer. Okay, so that's what I mean by the theory. And some very heavy machinery has been brought to bear on this class, this poor little class of Gaussian theories. And I believe we can ignore this. As long as we don't study four manifolds, so the spatial, as long as we don't take the case where the spatial four manifold has torsion in its homology, which for the purposes that we want, we can just ignore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. Yeah, that's right. Okay, and so this sort of model has been used in exactly the kind of way that I'm going to describe from, you know, sort of the reverse perspective to holographically define the partition function of the edge theory. So it gives you a covariant action for whatever the edge theory is. It's covariant, you know, it's so covariant it's even topological. Mainly in the case where the number of dimensions is 3 mod 4. So that's not 5. So such as 1 plus 1 dimensional chiral CFTs and various properties of this infamous 2,0 superconformal field theory in 6 dimensions. Okay, and I should mention, and I'll say more about this, the simplest example of these models is equivalent to a certain kind of ZK gauge theory, which you all know as the famous 4 plus 1 dimensional toric code, the kind of toric code that has memory, quantum memory, even at finite temperature. Okay, and that's related to Senthal's comment that it doesn't have particles. Okay, so let me talk about the bulk physics first. We need to ask, in order to use this logic I was describing, when does the theory have topological order so we can get rid of it? And so we're going to think about these p-forms. And for now, let's put it on a space that doesn't have a boundary. So this is time, there's some spatial four manifold that doesn't have a boundary. And right away, we can introduce the analog of these flux insertion operators, these things that you get by adiabatically moving whatever the would-be quasiparticles are around the cycles. It's just e to the integral of b. with a 2 pi I there. I don't want a 2 pi. I think with the, yeah, I think I should get rid of that 2 pi. These operators are the things that are inequivalent according to this identification that I described. And just canonically quantizing this theory, they satisfy this Heisenberg algebra that Mason wrote down. It's, you know, it's got more indices bristling off of it, but it's the same algebra. There's one subtlety, which is that it involves the intersection form on the two cycles of the four manifold. So this is just like this picture of a Riemann surface where, you know, there's A cycles and B cycles. And for a Riemann surface, the intersection numbers are completely fixed. You just need to count how many there are. On a four manifold, the story is more interesting. There's this intersection form, which is some non-trivial topological property of the four manifold, which isn't always just the identity. And also, it's symmetric as opposed to anti-symmetric. Okay, and so this algebra has one irreducible representation, which and it has to be represented on the states of this theory. And so the number of states is roughly the Pfaffian of the K-matrix. You know, so the determinant is the Pfaffian. It's an antisymmetric matrix. And a nice fact about four manifolds is that this intersection form is unimodular. Its determinant is 1. And so that means the condition that this thing has short-range entanglement is that the Pfaffian of the K-matrix is 1. So that's like you want the determinant to be 1 and 2 plus 1. Yeah? You want a better counting of the ground states here?
No, I'm a bit the Hilbert space theory is determined in terms of strings.
It's not. It's determined by B's. No. You're talking about some fictional strings that are, you know, some microscopic thing. You're doing high energy physics.
Yeah, okay, but so what I'm worried about is the notion of short angle is not being entangled.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I just counted the number of ground states.
No, but
on any four manifold.
Point particles,
yeah. What's a particle? Yeah. Yeah. I'll show you that a local model in 4 plus 1 dimensions can produce this. I'll sketch such a thing.
Yeah. And the Hilbert space will be a direct product of the
Yes.
For example, for particle, it's K like in 2 by 1 particle, like 0 to 0, 0 to 0 to 0.
That produces the Z2 Turok code, yes. Yes, that's right. Plus, it's 0, 2, 2, 0. No, it's symmetric in 4 plus 1 dimension. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I got mixed up. Yes, you're right. Yes. Yeah. Right, so K is anti-symmetric and I is symmetric. Yeah, good. A perhaps more prosaic way to count the ground states is to expand this B in terms of zero modes, in terms of a basis of closed forms, with some coefficients that depend only on time, and just plug this back into the action, in which case you get this quantum mechanics, which is obviously particles called B. They're periodic. They live on tori, moving in a magnetic field with a number of units of flux determined by K. Okay. So it's this.
What is the arc coming over?
The cycles of the four manifold. Yeah, a basis of the second homology. Yeah, this it spans the second integer homology. Okay. So I claim that this is a model of bosons. One piece of evidence for this is sort of low energy evidence. This is an interesting reversal in the kind of logic here. So the low energy evidence is that I didn't have to choose a spin structure on my four manifold to specify this thing. So unlike U1 level 1 Trin-Simons theory in 2 plus 1 dimensions, where there's the subtlety that secretly there are fermions, because a four manifold that emits spinners, the intersection form is even. That is, this thing is, so this is the why the, this is the same property that the E8 Cartan matrix has, that's 2s on the diagonal. And so in that case, if we want to describe an effective field theory for a fermionic SPT state, we can consider Z to be half integer, K to be half integer. And so that defines a theory of fermions with this normalization. And this is like this spin Trin-Simons theory described by Bailoff and Moore.
So you mean the
phase that you'll be looking at it? Yeah. The eigen, yeah. The skew eigenvalues can be half integer to describe fermions. So for k equals 1, there's no fermionic excitations. The high energy evidence that this is a bosonic model is the following conjecture for a model of bosons that produces this, which this Brian was very helpful in trying to construct this, which is inspired by, I don't know who first constructed such a model, but I learned how to do this kind of thing from Semple, so he can't blame me too much. And so the model is put rotors on the plaquettes of the, so triangulate your four manifold, put, you know, pick a lattice, and on the plaquettes, the two-dimensional objects, put rotors. So there's a Hilbert space labeled by an integer, and there's an operator which raises that integer. And think of that as the some number of sheets covering the plaquette. I'm sorry I don't have as nice pictures as Fiona had. They're a little harder to draw. And put charge K bosons, so actual bosons, along links, so they're oriented, so that along one link is the creation operator, and along the other link is the same annihilation operator. And so think of this as creating a string segment, where this thing is the number of strings covering the link. And then, okay, so here's a Hamiltonian, which when this term is zero, I believe all the terms commute. And so this is this term imposes Gauss's law, which says that the number of sheets, if there's no strings, the sheets are closed. They can end, K of them can end on the strings. This is a term which makes the sheets hop. This is a term which discourages sheets. So when this thing is zero, the correlation length is zero. That's like the Torah code limit. And this is a term which lets the matter strings hop around. Okay, and this is the statement that they have charge K. That's the K that will appear. Okay, and so this Hilbert space, it's a local Hilbert space, right? There's just simple integer degrees of freedom at each site, at each kind of object, not quite sites, but plaquettes and links. And so we can label the Hilbert space by a soup of oriented, closed sheets, which if you have K of them together, they can end on a string. And but this is not quite there, because this model actually has photons. This thing has propagating modes. So this paper is an attempt to construct artificial electrodynamics, which this thing does just as well, except in four plus one dimensions, and the photon has two indices. And so to get rid of that photon, we condense these strings. And doing that there's the Higgs mechanism, which turns this string kinetic term into a term which gets rid of b, which is not 2 pi over k. So that is to say that e to the kb should act as the identity on the low energy Hilbert space, which says that these integers now are only valued mod k. There are k species now of unoriented sheets, which are the strings which we're talking about. And so the ground states of this thing are equal superposition sheet soup, and there are k to the b2 sectors in the case when the intersection form is the simplest one, like for s2 times s2. Okay, so the model exists in 4 plus 1 dimensions. And there's a sort of the continuum version of the words I was just saying is we take a U1 two-form gauge theory, Higgs it by condensing some one-form matter fields to produce an action like this. This is the Higgs, the sort of superconductor kinetic term. This is the mass for the B field. And right, so if k is bigger than 1, there's topological order. K equals 1 is the case where there's not topological order. That's the case I want to talk about. So the thing I'm talking about is Z1 gauge theory, which you might think is trivial, but it has interesting, but it's not, and it has interesting edge states. You completely Higgs it. Yes, that's right. That's right. Don't call it a fundamental string. Okay, so let's talk about the edge states. So Ashwin already explained this quite beautifully. But thinking about the Trin-Simons action in 2 plus 1 dimensions and thinking about what the Hilbert space is, if we put it on a space with boundary, you notice that this action is not invariant under gauge transformations, which don't vanish at the boundary. And so that means that there's a degree of freedom there. And that degree of freedom, it looks like a gauge transformation, but it's not equivalent to nothing. And it's a compact boson. And it's a dynamical boson. And imposing some boundary condition, we produce an action for that, which shows that it's a chiral boson. Notice, so this V, the information about the velocity of the boson, is a non-universal information. It's not present in this thing, which is topological. Obviously, nothing can move. It's some non-universal information, which microscopically is something about the shape of the potential in which you're confining your quantum Hall state. And so the lesson here is that the Hamiltonian, so although the Hamiltonian of the edge states depends on the boundary conditions, how fast they move, I guess I'm missing a minus sign there. The Hilbert space does not. So it's the Hilbert space of the chiral boson, and the boundary conditions decide how fast it moves. Okay, so let's do the analogous thing. And I'm going to focus on the simplest case where it's just a 2x2 K matrix, and so there's a B and a C, which are these conjugate 2 forms in 4 plus 1 dimensions. And I'm going to add a boundary term, which is analogous to that. What happened? Okay. Okay. All right, well, we're almost to the punchline. I'm going to choose some boundary conditions by adding a boundary term. And then doing the path integral over B is a delta function which sets dc to 0. I'm studying the thing on the disk. There's no topology. That means C is exact. It's D of a 1 form. And if I plug that back into the action, what theory do you think I'll get on the surface? Well, so it's a theory of the only thing left is a single 1 form gauge field, a Boolean gauge field in 3 plus 1 dimensions. There's no B. All that's left is this. Now there's a star. I get to pick the boundary conditions. So the Hamiltonian is not 0. It doesn't need to be 0. I can pick it to not be 0. So does anybody recognize this action? I've written it in a kind of funny way. I called it lowercase a. Maybe it would look more familiar. It's Maxwell. It's Maxwell theory. It's just ordinary electrodynamics. So I've spent some time being really worried about the fact that I proved that lattice gauge theory doesn't exist. It was very upsetting to me. And we, you know, because we know how to regularize this perfectly well in 3 plus 1 dimensions with the Hamiltonian like the one I described in 4 plus 1 dimensions with, you know, there's link variables and, you know, okay, so lattice gauge theory exists. Well, right, so that's the next subject. We need to think about what symmetries I imposed. Good. So as Senthil was mentioning, in 2 plus 1 dimensional Trin-Simons theory, as it arises from quantum Hall states, there's a conserved current, which is this topological current. So there's automatically a particle current as long as A is single valued. In 4 plus 1 dimensions, the analog is these weird stringy currents. And so you might think that the weird stringy currents are important. And in fact, they are important if I want to show you that this is a non-trivial phase, even at k equals 1. So in 2 plus 1 dimensions, you can see that the integer quantum Hall effect is non-trivial using this charge current coupled to an external gauge field. There's a quantum Hall response. Without the charge current, I don't know how to do it except to study the edge states. The analog of that here is to couple this thing to some external B fields, which I'll call curly B because they're even fancier. And if you integrate out this B field, you get some string Hall response, right, which is quantized. And this thing is if the Fapion of K is an integer. Okay, so this is a non-trivial state if I preserve the stringy symmetry. And in fact, it's not possible to break the stringy symmetry. And you'll see that it's quite innocuous. So I claim that translation invariance is a red herring because the lattice model that I described in the bulk will have the same edge states. The stringy symmetries are also innocuous because following through the identifications I described, one of these components is just del dot B. The fact that that's conserved is just a statement that the magnetic charge is conserved. One of them is del dot E, that's just charge conservation. It's really very innocuous. The ones that are broken are actually equal to E and B. The fact that they vary is not shocking at all. So that's completely innocuous. There's a symmetry which is charge conjugation. That's also preserved in lattice gauge theory. There's a TP symmetry, which is simultaneously time reversal and parity, which acts on one of the Bs. This is just ordinary time reversal, also preserved in lattice gauge theory. Okay, here's the punchline. There's a manifest symmetry of the bulk, which is interchanging B and C, which is preserved by the bulk. You can't get rid of it. And it's just not breakable. And so the thing I've shown is that it's not possible to regulate, it's not possible to construct lattice gauge theory in a way that manifestly preserves electromagnetic duality. I have to admit that I actually realized this last night.
I think in the fourth class, I can imagine, can you somehow break that explicitly?
Not in the bulk. I mean, you'd have to break lots of other things too, right? You would have to break the topological invariance. And so for it to matter in the infrared.
Well, because you can add some kind of B squared term, not adding C squared term.
But that breaks gauge invariance.
Can you preserve a subgroup of
them? Well, here it's just a Z2. Well, so right, you could ask me whether I've also shown. Well, so the thing I've shown is that you can't regulate the theory explicitly preserving it. Yeah, I don't think they should be annoyed. I think it's, yeah.
So you have some term like a Maxwell term for B, and
you can add that Maxwell term, yeah. It didn't matter that I put the same coefficient. Because it's suppressed by some large mass scale. Yeah. Yeah, let me get to the end. Okay, so sorry. So while we're at it, there's a seven-dimensional version of this where the analog of the Maxwell theory is some much more exotic self-dual two-form theory, which plays an important role in this 2-0 theory. And so where I think we haven't had to impose any symmetries to make this true. So this is an introduction to regulating this 2-0 theory. So I only have one concluding remark, which is the following. It's not clear that all the obstructions we obtain this way are things that we would call anomalies, that high energy people would call anomalies. So Zhagong's been using this term in a way which sort of, you know, if we find something else, we'll just call it an anomaly. Maybe that's okay, I don't know. But it's not clear that they're things that we would have already called anomalies. And in particular, it's not clear that they're things which you can think of as they would be gauge anomalies if you tried to gauge it. It's not clear that in general that this is what we'll get. For example, as people have discussed, I guess Jingqing and Michael Levin encountered this, what would it mean, you know, some things are protected by time reversal, what would it mean to take I goes to minus I? Here we found an obstruction to preserving electromagnetic duality. In fact, so after I realized this last night, I found a little bit of previous literature suggesting that it's impossible to gauge electromagnetic duality. In other cases, like Mason mentioned, it is possible, in 2+1 dimensions. This obstruction to regulating a self-dual two-form in 5+1 dimensions, I also don't know how to think of as an anomaly. It's not a gravitational anomaly. I don't know how to think about it that way. And then finally, it's interesting to ask what kind of such thing would be a obstruction to regulating supersymmetry, because gauging that would lead to supergravity, which finding an obstruction to making supergravity would be very interesting. Okay, that's it. Thank you for listening.
So,
right.
So in particular, I can think of a domain wall between two ways to break the symmetry. For example, that one side I have a Higgs space which are condensed with charge, the other
right.
side I have a molecule that is confined. So there's something completely on the interface.
Yeah, I guess so. Let's see. If you have so the theory that I've constructed here though doesn't have any charges, right? You'd have to construct
the boundary is a Maxwell.
Right. It's Maxwell theory without any charge degrees of freedom. Well, I didn't. They're not in the theory I constructed. So, but it would be very interesting to construct another example where there is charge, and I think you could do that. And in that case, there should be. And it would probably have to have not the thing you condense would have to have not the fundamental charge, right? So that it's not screened, and there's a distinction between Higgs and confinement. Right? So you can't go around the. Yeah. Some. Well. Yes. There are cases where you can't. Yeah. That's interesting. Electromagnetic duality. Yeah, it's the thing that interchanges the two forms, which from the point of view of the edge theory, interchanges E and B, and B to minus, E to minus B, B to minus E. Yeah.
But what are these symmetries can be realized on the lattice of the interchanging two forms? Whether this will be a symmetry in the lattice
of in 4+1 dimensions. Yeah, that's a good question. I think I can do that, actually. I haven't done it explicitly, but I think I can.
If you can do that, it'll be gaugeable.
At least about toroidal.
The toroidal, yeah.
The last question.
Yeah, so do you have a direct proof in 3+1 dimensions that without relying on this 4+1 expression?
No. No. So these papers, actually, which I haven't read yet, don't go to 4+1 dimensions and give some evidence for this. They work in the continuum. So the thing that they say is you get something inconsistent if you gauge electromagnetic duality. They don't ask whether you can regulate it. So it's a very different perspective, which I think is uncovering the same physics. Yeah.
As for their proof, by asking about edgeability.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. All right, thanks.